In the fall of 2012, nearly 4 years after leaving the White House, 6 months before the opening of his presidential library, George W. Bush sat in his sleek, high-rise Dallas office, devoid of presidential trappings. No presidential seals or flags, no oil paintings, no Frederick Remington bronzes, and considered his father, the man he had revered since his earliest memories. His sneakered feet and khakied legs propped up on a generic executive desk, he leaned back in his black leather chair in a gray golf shirt as he fingered an unlit cigar, looking uncannily like his father at times, particularly when his face turned upright and to the side. The resemblance between the two had deepened through the years as the younger Bush aged. One could see the old man clearly in his bushy eyebrows, arched and slightly askew, the eyes narrow and squinting at times, and the amorphous opened mouth, though he lacked the patrician refinement in his features. His face was craggier, his hair wirier, and his forehead less expansive. Whatever pressures he had toward his father in his life, to prove himself to him, or surpass him, or rebel against him, had long ago fallen gently away. The stuff about him being the prodigal son was bullshit, he said in his curt, matter-of-fact Texas twang. Sure, in his late teens and early 20s he had chased a lot of pussy and drank a lot of whiskey. But he added, I was never the prodigal son because I never left my family. He and his dad had gone through some rocky patches, what father and son relationship hasn't, but his heart was with his father at every step. Also in the bullshit category was media speculation that he and his dad were locked in a competition that intensified during Bush 43's White House years. George W. never trusted the media, an instinct going back to his days serving his father during the latter's bid for the presidency in 1988, when he would aggressively demand of reporters seeking interviews, "Why should I talk to you? How do I know you're not out to get my dad?" The New York Times and the Washington Post, they never let up, and they never got it right. He and his father had always been close, he insisted. Always. Yet after 66 years, much of his father remained a mystery to him. George Herbert Walker Bush wasn't one to go on about himself, and despite all they had shared, some things, many things, had gone unsaid, adding to his mystique. All these questions people assumed my family knew about. My parents had been brought up to be completely reserved and not to talk about those things, Jeb Bush had observed. And with his life's shadow growing longer at 88, the elder Bush had gotten quieter, becoming, in the words of Gene Becker, his longtime chief of staff, a man of few words. As George himself put it, I've run out of things to say. George's early adult years, in particular, were a source of wonder for his oldest son. The latter chapters of his life, George W. could better understand because he had gone down similar roads himself. Both found success in business, embarked on ascendant political careers after early losses, and ultimately achieved the pinnacle of power in the White House. But the crowded, storied years of his father's late teens and 20s were as awesome to him as they were elusive. He marveled at what it was for his father to enlist in the Navy on his 18th birthday, go to war at 19, and become a husband at 21 and a father at 22. He could only imagine his father's excruciating pain after losing his 3-year-old daughter Robin to leukemia before he was 30. And he wondered what it was that prompted him to forego a family pass to the riches of Wall Street after graduating from Yale in 1948 and break away toward adventure and uncertainty in the desolate oil fields of West Texas. Those years were as formative for his father as they were propitious. They shaped him and ushered him early into manhood.